From the City of Angels off the Pacific Ocean, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be, across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie. Welcome to Coast AM. Open lines later tonight, along with a Russian exorcism. Well, somebody's been listening to Coast AM. Monday, I was talking to Robert Felix about ice ages and global warming, and I told Robert, I think the sun has a lot to do with it. Listen to this. Increased output from the sun might be to blame for 10 to 30% of global warming that has been measured in the past 20 years, according to a new report. Increased emissions of carbon dioxide and other heat-trapping gases still play a role, according to scientists, but climate models of global warming should be corrected to better account for changes in solar activity, according to Nicola Scarfetta and Bruce West of Duke University. The findings were published online this week by the journal Geophysical Research Letters. Scientists agree the planet is warming. Effects are evident in melting glaciers and reductions in the amount of frozen ground around the planet. The Duke analysis examined solar changes over 22 years versus 11 years used in previous studies. The cooling effect of volcanoes and other shifts in ocean currents can have a greater negative impact on the accuracy of shorter data periods. The sun, they say, may have contributed about 10 to 30% of the 1980 to 2002 global surface warming. And I believe that. Sea levels could rise around the world by 12 inches by the end of the current century, and freak weather will become more common due to rapid global warming, according to another study by a leading German research institute. The Max Planck Institute for Meteorology in Hamburg said computer models that it had created showed the average global temperature could rise by as much as 4.1 degrees Celsius by 2100, melting sea ice in the Arctic. Well, we already know what's happening. Our research pointed to rapid global warming and the shifting of climate zones, said the project leader. The German study's release comes just days after U.S. scientists said the Arctic ice shelf had melted for the fourth straight year to its smallest area in a century, driven by rising temperatures. So something is obviously happening worldwide. In the Los Angeles area, hundreds of people have now been allowed to return home as firefighters gained some ground against the 20,000-acre wildfire that cast such a smoky haze over the city that drivers turned on their headlights in the middle of the day. That includes me. The blaze on the Los Angeles-Ventura County line was 20% contained and was expected to be 35% surrounded by the end of the day. They're very happy with the weather today. This was a good opportunity and very important for fighting this fire. Firefighters were aided by fading desert winds that let more humid ocean air move back inland, but the shift also pushed smoke over parts of Los Angeles and neighboring valleys, triggering health warnings. At one point, motorists drove through the San Fernando Valley with their headlights on, health officials urging those people with heart and lung diseases to take precautions. Well, the United States and its allies must act to stop Iran's nuclear programs by force if necessary, because conventional diplomacy will not work, according to three senior Israeli lawmakers from across the political spectrum. And they are warning, as a last resort, Israel itself would act unilaterally to prevent Iran from acquiring nuclear arms. Iran will not be deterred by anything short of a threat of force, they say. They won't be stopped unless they are convinced their programs will be destroyed if they continue. Now, I wonder if this is just verbiage or if something really is in the make here. Sunni Arab opposition, by the way, to Iraq's draft constitution has increased the potential for instability and now has called into question U.S. hopes for substantial troop cuts next spring, according to the top U.S. commander in Iraq. General George Casey, speaking at a Pentagon news conference with Defense Secretary Donald Rumsfeld, said his prediction in July, just a few months ago, that fairly substantial troop withdrawals would begin next spring was based on a key assumption that satisfactory progress on the political and security fronts would continue. Now, he says, this constitution has come out, and it didn't come out as the national compact that we thought it was going to be. And there's division there, and that caused the situation to change a bit, he says. There are now more than 149,000 U.S. troops in Iraq. Casey noted that he had told Congress on Thursday that even with the new uncertainty, he still believed some troop reductions were possible in 2006. An imam who was scheduled to be sworn in today as the second Muslim chaplain in the New York City Fire Department's history has resigned the day after he made headlines for questioning whether 19 hijackers really were responsible for the September 11, 2001 attacks. The imam, his name is Inkatab Habib, had suggested a broader conspiracy may have brought down the World Trade Center, put a hole in the Pentagon, and left 3,000 people dead. An hour before the imam was to be officially sworn in, Fire Commissioner Nicholas Scapetta told reporters it became clear to him that he would have difficulty functioning as the chaplain. There has been no prior indication that he held those views. In a telephone interview, Habib, a 30-year-old, a native of Guyana, who studied Islam in Saudi Arabia, said he doubted the U.S. government's official story blaming 19 hijackers associated with Al-Qaeda and Osama bin Laden. Habib joined the department as chaplain on August 15th. It was a part-time position. He did say the attack was a tragic incident and that he sympathizes with the families who lost loved ones. Whoever did it, he says, it was a very wrong thing. It's always wrong to take an innocent human life. A man was arrested after causing a scene on the set of the new Tom Hanks thriller, The Da Vinci Code. The 39-year-old was said to have been led away by police after trying to get the star's autograph on location at Roslyn Chapel in Scotland. The historic building features in Dan Brown's best-selling novel in which the film is based. Hanks has spent the week filming scenes there. A security force told a newspaper that the man had been hanging around the set on and off during the week and had been warned about his behavior. The Da Vinci Code is due out for release sometime next week. And a Soyuz rocket has successfully launched two astronauts and one space tourist on their first steps toward the International Space Station. They are in orbit right now after a successful liftoff from Kazakhstan. Tucked inside their Soyuz spacecraft, ISS Expedition 12 Commander Bill MacArthur, flight engineer Valerie Tokarev, and space tourist Gregory Olson rode in their Soyuz spacecraft as it pulled away from its launch pad at 11:55 p.m. Eastern Time. Olson, by the way, is paying $20 million for a 10-day space flight that will make him the third space flight participant to the ISS. Olson will spend about 1 week aboard the ISS performing three medical experiments for the European Space Agency. And also, though, he has brought some interesting equipment with him. So interesting, indeed, that we're going to devote an hour to talking about it with our guest David Sarita in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And we're going to take your calls a little bit later on this hour with our guest, David Sarita. Now, as I mentioned, scientist, entrepreneur, inventor Gregory Olson paid $20 million for a trip to the International Space Station. He's up there in orbit right now. Olson plans to bring along, I guess he did, his company's miniaturized infrared imager to observe Earth's atmosphere and agricultural crops above them. And such infrared cameras are used in night vision systems as well as remote sensing devices that can pick up the normally invisible signs, they say, of pollution or crop damage. He also intends to turn the camera towards space and conduct near-infrared astronomy, which cannot be done from Earth due to the atmosphere's effect. But why? That's the question. David Sarita's first aspiration in life was to become an astronaut in 1968. David and a friend witnessed a UFO along with hundreds of other witnesses. After this experience, David grew up as a UFO enthusiast, never living in doubt of the phenomena that has swept the world since the Roswell incident in 1947. His interest in space religion, philosophy, astronomy, science led him onto his career in related fields, and he has worked deeply in high technology on environmental and humanitarian issues and as a professional photographer for more than 20 years. He has studied world religion, science, physics, paranormal psychology for more than 25 years. And it's bringing this infrared camera into space by Gregory Olson that has caught the eye of David Sirita. David, welcome back to Coast to Coast. How are you?
Good, George. Good to hear your voice again.
Now, tell me a little bit about why this is of such interest to you and now us.
Well, originally when my film Evidence the Case for NASA UFOs came out, in my six-year scientific study throughout the 90s, I quickly learned that NASA was looking in the invisible with special video cameras that are equipped with special sensors that can see near ultraviolet and infrared. And I actually got confirmation of that fact, even though James Oberg argued against it. Their scientists confirmed that, yes, our cameras are equipped with special sensors that can see the near ultraviolet and the infrared. So once I had pretty much confirmed that, I deducted that it was quite possible that many of the UFOs we're seeing on the space shuttle video cameras are actually invisible. I remember when I saw the UFO in Berkeley in 1968 that after 20 minutes, the crowds were watching and it just went invisible in the blink of an eye. And many people have actually seen that happen. So that's why it's peculiar to me that he's going into space. He's spending $20 million, Greg Olson, and he is the chairman of Sensors, Inc., which specializes in invisible photography, invisible sensing devices that we equip cameras with. I assume that he must be aware of the phenomenon of UFOs showing up in the invisible. When we talked earlier last year about the Mexican sightings in the case over Mexico and the infrared, it was all over the world. It was on Fox News. It was on CNN. I mean, it was virtually everywhere. And also my film Evidence, the Case for NASA UFOs, is virtually everywhere now. So I think it's becoming common knowledge. And so what we did tonight is Wex has posted a bunch of photos on your website of there's actually the top photo is the STS-75 UFO that was captured in the invisible, and you can actually see a spiraling wave coming out of the black hole in the center. And then you'll see down below that, these are stunning photos, because after I made my film, I was notified by my friend Luke Gatto of Trevor James Constables, who is a New Zealand radar operator in World War II. And Constable noticed during the war many detections on radar of UFOs that we went up and launched our fighters to go meet, and we never actually saw anything, but we could see the signals loud and clear on radar. So he starts taking photos, and the first photo at 1958 over Los Angeles, you can see the same translucent disc with a dark center, but this disc is oriented very steeply, somewhere near 45 degrees, not really 45 degrees, but somewhere near there. So the orientation of the disc is so steep, and yet there's the black center, just like the NASA UFO above it. And below that photo is another photo, which shows another translucent disc taken out at Giant Rock, where George Van Tassel was lecturing to thousands of people early in the morning, claiming to be in contact with extraterrestrials and channeling them, and there were no UFOs visible. So Constable's out there doing his experiments, taking invisible photography, and he uses high-speed infrared film without the red filter. It gives you near ultraviolet sensitivity. Now you'll notice above the rock formation a disc with a dark center, very similar to the NASA UFO. And then you come down further, you'll see a huge mothership, which there's a little flag on the top of a mountain, and right where that flag is, there's a podium where Van Tassel is lecturing to thousands of people. And then below that, you'll see a recent photo from UFOEvidence.org. They posted literally an enormous number of photos where people are taking pictures with their home digital camera, tourist photos, and when they download them, lo and behold, there's UFOs in them. And this is a common phenomenon now. And if you notice this disc, the long black streak or faint gray streak behind it, you'll see a light disc, clearly a disc with a little knob on the top. And if you consider the shutter speed of the camera as daytime, it's got to be at least a 250th of a second or 500th. The fact that it's streaking that far means this thing is moving incredibly fast.
Okay, so if you have computers, get up to the coasttocoastam.com website. Look at the photos that David Cerita has provided to us. You're going to find those, as he said, to be fascinating, and the imagery is truly remarkable as well. So, David, what you're saying, though, is that these UFOs are physical. They're there, but they're just in some invisible wavelength, almost cloaked. Right?
Yeah, well, like I explained earlier in our last presentation, that my theory shows, and I've used very precise quantum modeling to show how this can happen in the atom in smaller but also in larger scales. They wave transform their mass, so they reduce the mass gravity effect of their craft down towards zero, and when they get really high frequency, they're invisible because we only see from red to violet. So cameras that can see, you know, infrared or ultraviolet. Ultraviolet is divided into near, far, and extreme. And NASA's cameras can see into the near UV. Now, when I was arguing about this at NASA and debating it with their scientists, some of their scientists believe there's truly a phenomena going on here, and others didn't. But what we said was the only way we're going to end this debate is if I go up on the space shuttle and I bring such cameras and I do experiments to see if they can prove me wrong or I can prove them wrong. And now Greg Olson is actually doing that. He's spending his own money, $20 million. And this is a guy who's so aware of invisible photography. I deduct that he must have seen things in his own photography.
Well,
but
do you think NASA, David, is going to allow Olson to shoot all this infrared photography and come back with pictures of UFOs and tell us all about it?
No, I can't imagine they would, but you know, will Olson, will he, you know, download the files while he's in Russia to a, you know, a computer somewhere where, you know, he can either share them with his close friends or maybe he will share them with the world. I actually phoned Space Adventures, the company that brokered the deal for him today, and I got a message to Greg Olson before he launched that he should include the near ultraviolet. He should get another sensor and another video camera up there as well as the infrared. The reason UFOs show up so good in space and as well as Constable's photos on your website is because in the infrared is because space is freezing. It's minus 273 degrees.
Right.
So any heat signature is going to be a beacon in contrast to that. Constable photographs early in the morning before sunrise, so you don't get all of the visible light rays heating up the atmosphere, and your contrast signal-to-noise ratio is very good when the background's very cold. The same thing happened in Mexico last year. You were at 12,000 feet, 11 or 12,000 feet, and it's freezing up there. And of course, infrared, you know, cameras, if there's a heat signature that's invisible coming from the radiation fields of the UFO, it will show up like a beacon on infrared cameras. So they are very good, but I suggested to him that he also look in the near ultraviolet. And his assistant wasn't laughing at all. She said, you know, I'll get a message to him before he goes up and just write me an email and they'll forward it to him. The question is he going to write me back? You know, especially now that I'm going on the radio.
What if he already knew about this, David?
I think he did. I think there is a high probability he has seen or heard about evidence, the case for NASA UFOs and all of the work I've done in the invisible. But there are others, like I said, Trevor James Constable, whose book is not really well known today, The Cosmic Pulse of Life. These photos are right out of his book. I know Trevor personally, and I've met with him and interviewed him. The last photo at the bottom shows a little egg-shaped orb with a squiggly line behind it. And I did some incredible math on that waveform based on the shutter speed of the camera. And I come up with a frequency on that wave that it's really incredible. The wave itself, first I thought the little orb was going by at 600 miles an hour because I estimated the size of the flag and the distance.
Okay.
And then I realized that if the orb was going by at 600 and something miles an hour, it would streak at a 30th of a second, which is the shutter speed. It would be blurred. But it's the wave that's traveling that fast, and that's the speed of sound. And then I measured the frequency on the wave, and I came up with a particular number in frequency that is only common with out-of-body experiences on the human brain. So I believe that orb is like what Carlos Castaneda calls that when a shaman actually sees the human aura, they only see an egg shape, which is the heat or energy signature around the human aura. The wave traveling behind it is actually traveling at the speed of sound, which is very peculiar. You can't imagine that is just coincidence, because that's the speed at which sound or voice vibrations move. So it's possible that is the intelligentsia hovering below the mothership, which you see above that shot, sending a telepathic message, a very low amplitude voice message at the speed of sound to its recipient.
So you believe, though, very quickly, that around space, around the International Space Station, there could be UFOs all over the place.
Well, we're seeing them clearly on many space shuttle missions. In fact, just recently, Donald Ratch sent me video from STS-114 this past August, and we've got an incredible UFO, which we'll all describe when we come back.
All right, we'll do that, and we'll also open up the phone lines, numbers to follow, to give you a chance to talk with our guest, David Cerita, this hour on Coast to Coast AM. And our guest, of course, David Cerita. We're going to take your phone calls in just a moment. Let me tell you a little bit about the After Dark newsletter, where you can get Perfect Possession. It's on exorcisms, Art Bell's interview with Father Malachi Martin. You can call 1-888-727-5505. You can also go online at coasttocoastam.com. And at the top of next hour, I will play for you an exorcism that was conducted in Russia. And believe me, this one sends chills up your spine. It did me. I'll be back in a moment. And welcome back to Coast. Right before we take some calls, David, why don't you finish up that story you were telling us about
the... Well, on STS-114, we're seeing probably one of the brightest, clearest UFOs again on the space shuttle's near-ultraviolet-sensitive cameras, possibly infrared. Very bright, coming in from the lower right. It speeds up to catch up to the shuttle, which is traveling at 18,000 miles an hour. And then it stops, flying in tandem speed with it. And then it turns out and goes out the other way. Now, this video comes courtesy of Donald Ratch, who sent this to me about a month ago. When we started breaking the video down, adding only contrast enhancement, when we zoomed in on it, my partner John Johnson and I, when we were editing, we were so surprised to see a golden mean rectangle with a very bright pulsing light in the center. Now, if we remember the movie Arthur C. Clarke's 2001 and 2010, there's the appearance of this mystical golden mean rectangle in both films, symbolizing the creation and the creator.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I was so shocked to see that, but also there was a report in the news recently posted on rents.com about witnesses in New York saw a golden rectangle hovering over the city with a spiraling vortex of energy going up into the golden rectangle. So that was the second sighting, and a personal friend of mine actually had one of these things, these golden rectangles, appear in his house, and he hasn't even seen the movie, Arthur C. Clarke's films, 2001 and 2010. So this film we're going to actually make public soon. We're just doing some editing and commentary work on it. But I wanted to play the actual words of Greg Olson, because this morning when I went on CNN and I heard it, I sent emails all over the UFO community, and CNN pulled the clip very quickly.
Uh-huh.
But you can hear his three main reasons to go into space. First, just to be in space. Second, to bring his infrared camera with him. And third, just to educate children. So let me just play this.
All
people
right,
can hear this clip.
Greg Olson, up there now.
As long as just the joy of being in space, weightlessness and so on, I still hope to bring my infrared camera up on board and share the experience with kids.
Could you hear that?
Yeah. Share experience with kids.
Yep. And bring my infrared camera
on board. Yep.
And then, of course, he's been quoted several times throughout the day that, you know, and we now know who he is. He owns the company.
Well, what's kind of interesting, too, David, in the old days of Apollo, astronauts who wanted to bring items aboard because of weight had to smuggle, like, coins and things
right,
and not say anything about it. Here's a guy who's bringing an infrared camera with him.
And it's no news. I mean, to talk about astronomy, NASA already has, you know, satellites, COBE, IRAS, and ISO, all look in the infrared in an astronomy sense, pictures of the sun and the moon. So this is not like we need to spend $20 million to do the same thing COBE, IRAS, and ISO does. This is his personal. He said, bring my camera up with me. He didn't say he was going to be, you know, looking at data from existing satellites.
Exactly.
That have even better cameras. It's a personal thing. So that means he must be aware. And I said the words UFO to his assistant today, at Space Adventures, and they were very serious. There's no way.
Yeah, they didn't hang up on you, did they?
They didn't hang up on me and say you're crazy. No, this man knows. He knows what's going on. But what I propose now is that, and I actually seriously mentioned this to NASA scientist Joe Knuth. He said, if you get enough signatures, if enough people want you on the shuttle to investigate UFOs and the invisible, you could end up there. But the other way is if someone would actually sponsor me. And I actually got to say that on the Fox News, and that is something I'm very serious about. I have...
Of course, just your luck now, David. There probably may not be any shuttles.
No, but there are these missions, for example, like Space Adventures, where you can, if someone's willing to sponsor you, you
right.
can end up on a mission.
Too bad Lawrence Rockefeller isn't alive.
He isn't around anymore.
He would have. Hey, let's take some calls. You ready?
Yeah.
First-time caller line, you're on the air on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hello?
Yeah, go ahead, sir.
Oh, okay. Hi. My name is Nick. I'm from Boardman, Ohio.
Okay.
And first of all, George, I love the show. Big fan.
Thank you. Appreciate
I think it's great what you're doing, David, you know, trying to get the word out about all this stuff. I think this new photo technology you guys got is fantastic. I just want to say, like, have you considered maybe using this technology to just take pictures around certain areas of the country? I mean, because I've seen 3 UFOs in this past year, just in the Boardman area, you know, and
yeah.
I'm just curious. I mean, maybe they're around lower altitudes, you know, just kind of hanging out.
Well, that's what I'm showing on the website tonight. There are plenty of photos coming in from these digital cameras that are picking up invisible UFOs. People are downloading their pictures onto their computers, and these are clear photos. UFOevidence.org is probably the best site because they actually show you the details in the report that the photographer did not see the UFO at the time of photography, and there are plenty of them. So it already is happening. It's becoming a phenomena that more and more people are aware of the invisible. I personally did a test at the Palo Verde nuclear power plant with my video camera. I videotaped it early in the morning before sunrise. I was looking for gamma pulses because gamma rays are invisible, and lo and behold, I got this big, bright, violet burst on my video camera that I did not see in the naked eye, which are gamma radiation bursts when they're doing the fission of the uranium. The gamma rays, they go through concrete, steel, everything, and so you can see it. It's really
wow.
a bright flash. So cameras, yes, many cameras can see invisible energy signals.
That's amazing. Hey, thanks for your time.
Okay.
That's not the end.
Thank you. It's sort of, David, like idol recording orbs and ghosts. You know, when people take pictures
mm-hmm.
in a cemetery or someplace, all of a sudden they get their, they look at their pictures, they grab the digital of frames, they look at it, and they go, oh, I didn't see that when I took my picture.
I know. I've seen a lot of those photos up on your site in the past year. The one in the church.
Oh, yes.
That bright, incredible angelic presence. You've even got one up now with a little face and a little ball of light near the, I guess it's a children's kind of play center
mm-hmm.
or something. I mean, that's what's so amazing about these digital cameras. I think they're almost better than some of the infrared technology that's out there right now. If a presence is there, if it's really there, and there is an electromagnetic signal, these digital cameras will pick it up. And it's really fascinating to see the pictures coming in because it's proving not only UFOs, but the spiritual dimensions, these dimensions that some people, even schizophrenics, can actually see and experience are actually detectable now.
All right, Wildcard Line, you're up with us on Coast to Coast. Hi there, where are you calling from?
Hi, George. Hi, David. I'm calling, this is Pete calling from Detroit.
The old hometown. Hi,
oh,
Pete.
Oh, yeah. I work at Fox News there in town, and I've been working with FLIR infrared.
So you're at WJBK?
Yes, sir.
You know, I used to work there.
Yeah, I know that.
1970.
Yeah. Murray Feldman and... Yeah,
74 to 78, Murray Feldman. He's still there, right?
74 to 78.
Yeah.
Was that long? Wow. Yes, he's still there.
Okay, you tell him hi for me.
I sure will.
Okay.
When you say infrared, what wavelengths are you talking about? 3 to 5 micron or near infrared or long wave infrared?
Well, this particular camera that Olson has designed is near infrared, but with the cameras, the forward-looking infrared or advanced target forward-looking infrared cameras used in Mexico are able to see two wavelengths. They basically have near, and I think, I'm not going to describe the word far infrared, but there's two different wavelengths of infrared that are embedded into each other, so they get an even sharper resolution of infrared. But that's a $400,000 camera.
Okay, I've got a couple of these, 3 to 5 micron infrared. and they're sensitive to a hundredth of a degree temperature change.
Mm-hmm.
And I did take one out the other night to take a look at the sky, and you can clearly make out aircraft, clouds, stars. And I'm wondering if I could, if I should hook this up to a telescope, you know, a reflector telescope, and track the space station just to see.
The best time to shoot, again, is when it's really cold, especially in the winter, before sunrise, so that you have a nice cold background, and your heat signature is going to contrast really well against that. Like in Los Angeles right now, I mean, you're in Michigan, we're having a heat wave. You won't see anything because the background is so hot already. You have no contrast. So that's the secret, Trevor James Constable told me. But also you can take a regular 35-millimeter camera with high-speed infrared film without red filter. You get near UV sensitivity, or just take infrared, you know, pictures. Because sometimes the wavelengths on these things are so high in frequency that infrared is still not going to show anything.
Okay, we'll give it a shot.
Yeah, but
thanks. Appreciate you being on the program. East of the Rockies, you're on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hi, George.
I know this voice. I know this voice. I've heard you for 7 years. St. Louis, right?
Yeah.
Vicki.
Hi, David.
Didn't you just have a birthday?
Yes, I did.
I
remember. Big 5-0.
That's right.
He's one of those lucky callers who can call in and just get in every time.
Well, no, it's the first time I've gotten in since he's been on Coast. I used to call him all the time in St. Louis.
It's not that you haven't tried a bit, huh?
No.
All right, go ahead, Vicki.
David, your theory, I got to tell you, is right on about the singularity.
Yeah, that was a great show.
It was great. I got to tell you what happened to me, an experience I had that I know it's right.
Mm-hmm.
I was asleep, and I woke up, and the whole room was vibrating. I could feel, like, a vibration in my body in the whole room, and when I opened my eyes, colors were swirling in a spiral.
Wow.
They were red and green, and they were just spiraling around the whole room.
Wow.
And it freaked me out so bad, I sat up and to try to make it stop. And I looked at the clock. It was 10 in the morning, and I thought, what was I dreaming? I knew something real strange had happened, and I dreamt I was hugging my granddaughter.
Wow.
So here, the next day when I talked to my daughter, she told me my granddaughter had almost fell out of her car.
Oh, my.
And her father had grabbed her as she was falling out right by her jacket and caught her. And I said, what time was that? She said, 10 a.m.
Oh, my God, that's an
time
miracle
I woke
story.
Up. Yeah, and...
Wow.
Something told me that it's all to do with mind, frequency, and the color green.
Wow, yeah. I'm gonna be doing a documentary film on singularity. I got so much interest from that show, George. I got hundreds of emails.
Oh, I know. You did a great job, David.
It was a really fascinating experience that night.
Do you know what the color green is, David?
The color green is the color of the heart chakra.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It's love. I knew it was love.
Yeah. It's love, yeah.
Okay, Vicki. Hey, it's good to hear your voice again, Vicki.
Glad
to hear your story. Amazing story.
Okay. By the way, 3 people admitted to a hospital in Toronto, some unidentified respiratory condition, leading to some quarantines out there. Not a lot of information, but those of you in Toronto, when we have open lines in a few moments, if you want to check in with us, if you have any information, we'd be more than willing to talk with you about that.
Wow.
Strange situation there. West of the Rockies, welcome to Coast. You're on the air with us. Hi there.
Hi, George.
Hi.
Good talking again. This is Rod calling from Phoenix.
Phoenix. Yes, Rod. Go ahead.
I was just curious. About 4 months ago, I know everybody was pretty excited because the South American country was going to open up all of their UFO files.
Brazil. Yep.
Right. And is anything exciting or new coming out of that? Have you heard any more?
Well, they opened up the files. Some of them, of course, classified. They haven't like opened up the spigot of everything. But some researchers are getting some information. But the fact that the government is willing to do it, I think, is dramatic all by itself.
Yeah, me too.
How was that received, David, in the UFO community?
Well, I think it's really well received when any country comes forward and opens up their files. I mean, even Project Blue Book, which in Preston Dennett's books, UFOs Over California, which I'm reading right now, has 2 cases of UFOs. One was spotted near Apple Valley where military witnesses saw a UFO that was a shiny metallic disc with a dark center. There are 2 cases like that. And there's another case, I have a file unclassified in front of me, that shows one in China that is a disc with the notch out of the side of it, very similar to the NASA UFO. So a lot of these case files are really valuable. We need to open them up to study them, to look for recurring patterns, consistencies in the phenomena.
Okay. Right, thanks for your call. Appreciate you being part of Coast to Coast. Few more moments left. We'll take a few more calls, and then we'll have to wrap it up for this hour with David Sarita. Wildcard Line, you're on the air with us on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hi.
Yeah.
I just wanted to comment. I was at John Wayne Airport in Orange County about 5 years ago, and this swoosh went over our heads. There was about 10 of us waiting for a shuttle, and we all crunched down. We thought something was going to hit us. It was super fast and just, whew, you know, and we looked up, nothing was there. It was this invisible swoosh above our heads, and we're all strangers looking at each other going, what was that?
Now, that's interesting. Invisible, David. So it's highly possible these craft are all over the place. We just don't see them.
Yeah, if you look at this last photo on the website and you look at this streak behind it, the one in Missouri from UFOevidence.org, and you see the streak and the shutter speed, this thing, I mean, at a 250th of a second or a 500th of a second on a camera, you barely get a streak. This thing is going several thousand miles an hour. And if that were going by you, that would be all you would do. You would feel something. You wouldn't see anything.
But would you hear it just go?
Yeah, you might actually hear it. I mean, I've got one in my film, Evidence the Case for NASA UFOs, that you can see moving over the curvature of the Earth and disappearing on the other side. It moves at about 1,000 miles in 4 seconds. And that's about 0.9 million miles an hour. That's way beyond the speed of a bullet. I mean, you wouldn't even know what hit you if that thing was going by you. But when you're distant from it, the shuttle is 300 miles above the Earth. You could actually see this thing very clearly moving over the curvature of the Earth and disappearing on the other side. I mean, it's incredible.
It was strange because there was nothing there, and all of us clenched. Mm-hmm. You know, we hunched down, thought it was going to hit us.
Yeah.
That's scary.
I've heard other stories like that. That's not the first time I've heard a story like that. It's again, that's why you want to open up these files so you look for patterns, consistencies, and then it makes it easier to study the phenomena.
Okay, Carol, thanks for your call. Appreciate that. Can you imagine that, hearing a whoosh, knowing there's something there and you just can't see it?
It's scary almost.
Let's go to our first-time caller line. You're on the air with us. Hi there.
Hi, this is Elliot from Plymouth, Minnesota.
Hello, Elliot. Go ahead.
Hi. I emailed you a few months back because this is exactly on the money of what I've been seeing. I thought I was going crazy.
Nah.
It's unbelievable. I mean, I've been talking to my brother about it. He's seen a little bit of it, too. But about 3-4 months ago, early spring, we had a sighting over there in St. Paul. It's on the Minnesota UFO site. And it was a bright light in the sky. Nobody could figure out FAA. Nobody knew what the heck it was. And, well, that night after I heard it, I got off work because I worked till late at night. And I look out there, and there I see that same light. I go, that's got to be the same thing. So I'm watching this thing, and it was moving around doing weird stuff. So then after that, I've been seeing like other lights, you know, and I'm going, oh, there's more than one, or there's, you know, I start seeing more. So I get my binoculars and start checking these things out. And as I'm checking these things out every night, I'm starting to notice these things are some kind of ships. And they're like, you guys probably think I'm nuts, but to me, I think it's almost like an invasion. That's what I wrote in the email. And I mean, it's like,
yeah, I remember that. I remember the invasion portion you put in there. David, are we being invaded?
It's either we're discovering the invisible, we're finding out that they've always been here, and or there are more video cameras, or maybe we're coming to an omega point, that there are so many sightings today, you kind of wonder, are they just going to keep observing us, or are we coming to a point here where there is going to be, they are going to disclose who they are and their full intentions.
David's website is linked up at coasttocoastam.com. And if you have not had an opportunity to get up there and look at the pictures he sent us, please do so. They are fascinating as usual. David, thanks for spending the hour with me. Appreciate it.
Yes, I'll keep listening, George.
Absolutely. And you check in with us. Olson's going to come back in a week and a half. Let's see what kind of pictures he might bring, huh?
Yeah, hopefully he's forthcoming.
Scientist up there in space on his way to the International Space Station. He spent $20 million for the privilege. He took an infrared camera up there, and David Sarita believes he might be taking pictures of UFOs. I'll be back in a moment with open lines for the rest of tonight. We're going to play a Russian exorcism next hour. And those of you in Toronto, if you know anything about a quarantine story there, with people coming down with some kind of respiratory problem, check in with us as well on the international line or any line you might be able to get through to. I'm George Norrie, and this is Coast to Coast AM.